Survivor's Guide to True Crime includes discussions of sexually based violence and is not intended for children. Information provided should not be used as a substitute for professional medical or legal advice. Please exercise discretion and self-care.
H-O-T-T-O-G-O. You can't take me hard to go.
Welcome back to Survivor's Guide to True Crime. I'm Kim.
And I'm Kara.
I'm wearing a pun shirt.
We're both wearing funny shirt. Tell us what yours is.
Mine is a hop, like barley and hops, you know. Wearing a party hat and balloons and a cupcake because happy birthday. Happy birthday to me.
I thought it was an artichoke and I was like, I don't get it. I was like, happy artichoke. I was like, I don't get it.
We have a brewery here in town that I absolutely love called Peculiar Ale. Ooh.
Yeah, we should try that.
Yeah, we should. They have a lot of gluten-free options.
Well, I have essentially determined in the last couple of months, I'm like, why do I keep trying alcohol? I don't like it. Just stop. I don't drink. Just stop trying alcohol and pretending like all of a sudden I'm going to like something. I'm not.
That's okay.
Like, I know, but it's like this cultural thing that, you know, alcohol is like this very acceptable, like, let's just go ahead and call a spade a spade. It is a drug. Like, alcohol is this culturally acceptable, and it is the only substance that you have to explain not using. Like, if you're like, I don't smoke crack, nobody's gonna be like, why? You have a bad experience with it? Like, no one's gonna ask that.
Much to some people's chagrin, nobody asks them. Nobody has offered me drugs
in a long time. It's been a long time since someone has offered me the drugs.
I scream narc to everyone, so I'm not actually all that surprised. But I was actually thinking about this very topic a couple days ago, because if you want to try being sober, then it almost feels like there's too much pressure. It's like, oh, well, are you sober or not? And then you get right back into that loop of, oh, I have to explain this.
I feel like that's kind of been this gray area that I've been in for a long time, where it's like, do you drink? And I'm like, not really. Every so often I might get a craving for a margarita or like a glass of wine. But every single time I take a sip of wine and I'm like, I don't want this.
Yeah.
Take a sip of my margarita and I'm like, I don't want this. So it's like, I don't know what I want, apparently. But yeah, so it's kind of like, am I sober? And then it's also like this weird thing where I don't want to be like, yeah, I'm sober, because it's like, it's almost like saying that has implications that I have an alcohol problem.
Right.
Right. But I just don't like drinking.
Yep.
Like, that's all there is to it. I would rather take a half of a CBD gummy and because I can do that any time of day and it doesn't alter my parenting.
Well, and I mostly quit drinking last year just because I felt better and I suddenly didn't need to nap and it was better health wise and such. And then when I started having a few, like around the holidays or something, I didn't feel bad about it. However, I notice now I won't drink like crappy wine or something. I'm like, if I'm going to have a drink, I want it to at least be worth it. And yeah. I'm not just doing it out of habit. I did switch it out for Shirley Temples. I have had a lot of Shirley Temples, and I think it's just that, like, I still need some kind of sugar.
Little fancy drink. Yeah.
Which also I feel like I do have to explain to people. They're like, oh, you're not drinking? No, I'm having a Shirley Temple.
I just like it. Okay.
I'm a child. Do I need to explain that to you?
She has chicken tenders in her purse right now. So yeah, Shirley Temple's chicken tenders. It tracks.
Hold
on. Wait, let me have one thought that I finished, Kimberly.
Oh, we don't do that here.
I similarly to you saying I'm not drinking crappy wine, I'm like, I could have 3 chocolate chip cookies or I could have a glass of wine. Or I'm like, that's not a decision for me. I would rather have the cookies than the wine. So, but you know, maybe sometimes you want the cookies and the wine and the milk and you want all the things, whatever.
I've dipped cookies in wine before.
Stop it. That cannot be good.
It wasn't not good.
It wasn't not good.
Ringing endorsement. Love that. Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of chicken tenders, here's our segue. I had said this on the live on Patreon, but Mike and I went with some of our friends down to concerts at Coors Field. They usually don't have them at Coors Field. That's where the Rockies play, or I mean, they show up. right now. They are present. But they did three nights of concerts on Coors Field. We got to go to Cheap Trick, Journey, and Def Leppard.
That's like insanely epic.
Okay, so I have thoughts, and I kept track of them because I didn't want to tell you before we recorded. First of all, it's very different than the Taylor Swift concert, which was one of the bigger concerts that I've been to. Like, this is my first big concert that wasn't a Greeley Stampede sort of thing.
Very, very different audience, yes.
Very different. This one seemed to be sponsored by AARP and the Rocky Mountain Men's Clinic, and it's a totally different vibe. I'm like, why can't we start these at 2 p.m. if it's got to be on a Sunday night? I want a matinee concert. Can you turn it down just a little bit? My ears hurt. There were a lot of people that had the loopies, including my friend Kirsta, and I was pretty jealous by the end.
My loopies, to be honest.
I know. So I'm just enjoying people watching because you had people who obviously have loved these bands since they first came out and they are here for it. And then you have the ones maybe like me who love them because maybe they grew up with them, like their parents are listening. And then you had ones that full on went cosplay, dressed up 80s style. There's people wearing mullets. It was so much fun. And then just a really broad range of people that were there. But most of us are older. I saw a couple kids in there. And otherwise, I mean, I was one of the younger in that crowd, which was totally fine. I have, I don't know if I should call it a superpower. How would you turn this? I can fall asleep in the middle of a concert.
Oh, girl, I've fallen asleep in a movie theater before.
Movie theater makes sense to me. I mean, I've definitely done that.
It was during what's the really long movie with Denzel Washington where he's like the bodyguard to the little girl?
Why did Titanic pop in my head? Oh,
that movie. It's very long.
With Dakota Fanning, Man on Fire.
Yeah, but it's like very, it's very action-y.
Yeah.
I felt during that.
So I just go to concerts and then I like to Irish goodbye from consciousness and I'll just be sitting there singing along and then whoops out. And I think I missed like three songs from Def Leppard's set. They were great. We are also Googling the ages of said band members this entire time. And the difference between the large concerts that I've been to recently was stark. I didn't realize how many Journey songs I knew. Like, Journey's got a really great whole thing. Here's something fun. Do you know that Journey is like, you know why I said that litigation and suing each other is rap battles for white people? Apparently, Journey does that within the band all the time, writes for music, what can be played. I found out, I think it's the piano player and the guitar player have to be on separate sides of the stage because they...
Yes, we're Googling things during
the part. I'm like, just a small town tort written in the civil court.
Stop it.
These are the things that were going through my mind the whole time.
But it reminds me of like the Fleetwood Mac stuff. Like the stuff that was going on during the Rumors album. You're like, how did they continue to make music during this?
I don't
imagine. Could you imagine that in modern day? Can you imagine a single band that could put their crap aside and make good music, but also be like,
I'm getting to talk to my lawyer about this.
Yeah, screaming at each other across the stage like Stevie Nicks. I just couldn't imagine.
I know, but like learning about that as they're on was hilarious. And their front man is not the same. I think they've had quite a few, but the front man, I was trying to figure out, is he lip syncing or is he actually singing? Because he's really into this. And it reminded me of extreme karaoke. And then we get to Def Leppard's set, which they went on after 9 o'clock. And I'm like, in this economy? No, I want to go home. Okay, we're watching this. They have, you know, they have screens set up next to the stage so that people can see. For each song, they have something on the screen, but you can still see what's live action happening. Leaned over to Mike and I'm like, I think they just discovered Snapchat filters. The whole time. I was like, this is really fun, but I'm super tired. And I ended up looking up the set list, which Mike told me is cheating and not allowed at a concert. But I looked it up because I didn't want to like accidentally fall asleep during the songs I wanted to hear.
Fair. What time did the concert start?
It started at 6.
Yeah, oh, that's great for 3 bands.
On a Sunday.
On a school night.
Right. When most of the people needed to get the early bird special anyway, and we have to get home because our knees hurt.
We're going to eat dinner.
Right. Which brings us back around to the point. They had a chicken tender stand on the top floor of the Rockies Stadium that we're looking, you know, there's all those different types of places that will do burgers or hot dogs or nachos. And then you'll find something that's like pulled pork. Okay, this one was specifically chicken tenders with tons of different sauces. I just veered away from the group like laser beam, went straight for it. And let me tell you, fantastic. I sat there with the chicken tenders and my little Angry Orchard drink that was probably part of why I can fall asleep in the middle of a rock concert, to include Metallica. I fell asleep at Metallica. You're on stage actively rocking out and I fell asleep.
Seems like you might want to get checked for narcolepsy, Kev.
Nah, I'm good. Not diagnosed, but I'm pretty sure.
Seems a little suspect. I don't know. So my husband also has this gene, can fall asleep anywhere, can fall asleep of a conversation. And one of my three children also has that gene. And so one of the earliest places that my husband fell asleep, that you're like, how could you fall asleep, was a Jayhawks game when he was like 4, like fell asleep in the middle of that. And my middle kiddo, I have a whole album of photos of weird places he's fallen asleep standing up. My husband once fell asleep underneath their back porch at their house, and his mom couldn't find him for hours and, you know, was ready to send out the cavalry. But yes, it's a fun little characteristic.
I too have many, many photos of me, to include my bachelorette party, where we all went out to have we did a wine tasting, and then I ended up meeting Mike back at the dinner spot, and it was like, and then I feel better. It's like, if I know I'm in a safe place where there's someone safe there, then I'm like, peace out, consciousness. I'm done here. It is. It is an Irish goodbye from consciousness.
I also feel like, okay, Irish goodbyes in general
elite
are kind of a Virgo trait. It's like, yeah, but it's also like yesterday when Kim and I were talking, I was like, okay, I'm done talking now. Goodbye. Like mid-conversation, and she burst out laughing, and I was like, I'm just at that point where I'm like, I'm done now. Bye.
Yeah. I have nothing further.
Yeah, I do that when I'm places. I'm like, okay, bye, I'm done.
Right. Well, and I do that in stores a lot, where I have like all this stuff in my arms, and then I have to think about what else I'm doing afterwards, and the fact that you want me to stand in that line. Nope. Oh, yeah. I just drop it. I'm like, I'm done. That is really the reason that places like TJ Maxx or Home Goods haven't bankrupted me, because that line that you have to stand in, not worth it for me. These are impulse buys, and you are stopping my impulse. I'm good.
I can relate to that, because it's like, is this worth the effort of me doing all the things? And I'm like, nope, I don't need this mug that bad.
Nope.
Because it's always freaking coffee mug.
You just put them right at the end where you're like, yes, I drink coffee. This must be for me. This has the most generic saying on it ever. And oh my God, it applies to me. Kind of like horoscopes.
But also, how many coffee mugs do you actually use? I think this is a fun poll.
Okay. This is a conversation Mike and I have had to have many a times, because I collect coffee mugs. Like when I go somewhere, I want a coffee mug, and I try to rotate all of them.
Oh, you're cute.
Pretty consistently. But here's the other part. Mike brings me my coffee every morning. So like,
he's not rotating them.
Yes, he is. He knows.
Oh,
yes.
That's cute.
And some of them will get kind of caught in the back and such, and then I'll rotate them out, like if it's a weekend and I come down. But he does this every single morning, and it's one of those like, I don't take that for granted. He goes down after the alarm gets out, lets the dogs out, and then comes back up. And so like this morning, here's,
I can't read it, what does it say?
The best man for the job is a woman.
Yeah, I like that one. Okay, but so I can't decide if that's very neurotypical of you or very neurodivergent, and I guess it could go either way. Because I will tell you, I have a cabinet full of mugs.
You use 3.
And I use 2.
What happened to the bird one and the brown one that I like?
The bird one and the brown and white one. Those are the only 2 that I use. That's it. I don't even use our mugs that I made for the podcast. I do use them to hold pins in my office. So I do use them, but I don't drink out of them because those two mugs, like the bird, it has to be, it's like the Goldilocks mug. Like it feels good in my hand, in my mouth. It's the right weight. It looks nice. I know. Stop.
No, Naomi, I'm continue.
There's a lot of things that go into.
Really enjoy the texture and what comes out of it.
Anyway, do you also use any old fork or spoon out of your drawer, or do you have? This is, I feel like if people want to know if you're neurodivergent or not, ask people this one question. Do you care what fork or what spoon you use?
This is a whole different level. Maybe this is my ADHD privilege. All of our silverware matches.
Yeah, no, all of ours does too, but we have small spoons and large spoons and small forks and large forks.
Well, it depends on what I'm eating.
Okay.
Or drinking.
But so you do have preferences.
Yeah, I use, like, we have a kid size one. Okay. And an adult one.
So we have like dinner forks and salad forks and cereal spoons and soup spoons, right? My kids and I have very strong preferences. We are very neurodivergent. And when I told my husband that, he was like, what? I was like, no, you gave me the wrong fork. So I'm very intentional when people come to my house to eat. I'm like, do you have preferences about your silverware? Because they are that strong for me. Like, so there is this brunch place that my kids and I love, and the forks there are very large and they only have three tines on them. And it makes me not want to eat there because I'm like, it doesn't feel good. It makes my brain buzz and not in a good way. So, you know, chime in if you're as weird and autistic as I am.
I mean, my favorite food is leftovers because I can stand in front of the fridge with the doors open and eat with my hands.
Oh, so you are also just a feral animal.
I'm just a goblin. Like, I don't care what the vehicle is to get it in and around my mouth. That's what she said.
This is a terrible episode. It's terrible.
Happy birthday.
Oh, happy birthday. I'm just wearing my Leon Lott shirt.
One of the other things that we were going to save and then I couldn't because you dropped a little nugget of, oh, remind me to tell you about this.
Yeah.
Okay, I need to know now. I can't wait. Was a story. And that's all. Go ahead.
And that's it. So someone that I'm close to was telling me a story recently where, first of all, they led up to it, right? The same way I did to you. Like, I think I've made a gigantic mistake.
... Tell me everything.
And I need your advice. And I'll tell you about it tomorrow when I see you. And I was like,
the fuck you will.
Okay. So
wait. Were you able to just sit and wait?
I did not have an option.
Rude.
I know. That was the lead up. I'm afraid I've made a gigantic mistake and ruined a lot of people's relationships.
If you can't get that tea immediately, that is certainly where I would Irish goodbye from consciousness just to speed up.
It was late at night and I was going to see that person like early in the next morning. And so I was like, all right, you obviously don't want to tell me about it via text. That's fine. So I'll, you know, tell me about it in the morning. And I was like, I cannot imagine anything that you could have messed up that bad that this person was saying, you know, I've cried myself to sleep for like a week over this, which I didn't even tell you that part. So see the person the next morning. And here is the situation. This person is in a relationship, has been for 20 years. And someone is aggressively pursuing her for a relationship, ideally for a sexual relationship. And she says, not interested. You know, I'm in a relationship. And then ignores all of the advances. Later goes on to tell, to kind of let it slip about what happened to people that are related to the aggressor. And now, because the information has been leaked, for lack of a better term, to the people who are related to this person, now it's a man. Now this man's actions have come out. It's affected his relationships with his daughters, with his wife. And so the person who was being aggressively pursued is carrying the guilt and says, I have ruined people's relationships because I couldn't keep my big mouth shut. And I said, you did not ruin anything. He ruined relationships. Let's just go ahead and get that straight right now. It is not your burden to carry someone else's aggression towards you that is unwanted.
Yep.
All you did was force somebody to be held accountable for their actions. You didn't ruin everything.
If anything, you corrected the record.
Right. And I was like, I said to her, I said, this is exactly how offenders continue to offend. This is exactly how people who aggressively sexually harass people pursue people when it's unwanted. I said, this is exactly how these people are able to continue to do these things because nobody wants to stir the pot and nobody wants to make trouble for these people who are the trouble. They're the trouble, not us.
Because they automatically know that that trouble is going to be put back on them by some of the people who are hearing about it, learning about it, whatever that case may be. They know that there are going to be consequences and they may not be the kind of consequences you or I would see, the general public would see, but they are certainly going to be carrying them regardless. I wrote this down as you were just talking about this because I noticed a difference in how you just told me that story right here versus a couple days ago. And I think it's, I do say so myself, quite profound. You are talking about him to keep identities safe. You were talking about him as the aggressor. So just that word, the aggressor. It's not wrong. It's not incorrect. He absolutely is the aggressor in this situation. When we know the person, we are far less likely to use that appropriate terminology and instead lead with the relationship that that person presents to either you or the other person in the story. When in reality, they're both. They can be father, brother, coach, boyfriend, whatever it might be. They can be any of those things and the aggressor. And it's really hard for people who are in that mix to appropriately label them as such. But for somebody outside looking in, it might be a little easier. And so just that very small shift in terminology helps take some of that burden and that blame off of victims when you look at large scale crimes. So when you think about all of those things that are going on in that person's head, and then you add to it the normal everyday life stressors, mental burdens, like we see these people every single day and we have no idea what they're carrying with them. And so I think about the times that you or I were in our greatest moments of trauma or stress on top of all of the other things that we have to do, whether it was at a time where we were students or graduating or newly married or mothers or working or pursuing careers. Like, and also we have all of these things on top of that. And yeah. I feel like so many people have that. So many people that resonates with, because you aren't just carrying around the stressors that people can see.
Yeah. I think that society in general is starting to become more cognizant of this idea of all the different mental burdens that we carry and how they can weigh on you. And it's not to say, I think we sort of view this word burden as like this negative connotation. No, it's just like, you know, are we carrying more than we're able to? It's like, is our checked bag over 50 pounds?
Yes.
Like, yes, it is. Maybe we need to take some stuff out of it. So this is something that I have been really trying to figure out, which is a big part of why I took a break from social media. I'm kind of easing back into the waters a little bit. But it's because I was like, I'm drowning. Like, I've been drowning a lot of other times in my life. But one of the things that I've realized that I'm doing is I'm relying on someone else to come and take stuff out of my luggage. And no one else is coming. Like, I feel like we say something to this effect quite regularly. It's like, no one's coming to save you.
You look around at everybody else that's in the line.
And all their bags are too heavy too.
Well, and you don't know if they paid extra for their bag, if they have multiple bags, their destination's different. They may be staying for a smaller amount of time. They may be just going home. You have no idea. However, you think everyone has that one bag that's overweight. Did I say big?
Big?
My big? Everyone has this bag, but we have no idea what's in it and what are the other circumstances surrounding it. All you have control over is how you pack and unpack your own bag.
Oh, yeah. You know, I've been thinking a lot about like the last couple of weeks. I've been thinking a lot about, honestly, the hardest season of my life, which was the first couple of years that I was postpartum with my second. And I don't remember if I actually told you this. There's a couple days ago. I think about this period of my life all the time. And so I think about it in terms of my second child. I don't really remember the first 3 years of his life. And I know we've talked about that here before. And it's not in a like, oh yeah, they flew by. No, it's like looking at photos of a stranger's baby.
You are dissociated.
Completely dissociated. So there's not like much emotional encoding, which I think is important to remember about dissociation, is very often the emotions are not encoded with the memories. It took me a long time to understand that, because I was like, do I need to go back and like attach emotions? And my therapist was like, they're not there. Like, they actually don't exist.
Mm-hmm.
So I think about this period of time that it was 2 to 4 years. So I'm just going to say 3 years. It's about 3 years that I don't really have much memory. And I've always thought about it in terms of, oh my God, I don't remember the first 3 years of my second child's life. I've never really, I can't say never, but I don't think about it in terms of my first child.
Say more about that.
Yeah. So that led right up to the most difficult years of my first child's relationship with me, basically. We are unpacking stuff in real time. You guys are getting to like, oh, like you see my shoulder. Like if you're watching the video, you see my shoulders like slowly creeping up. Stop it. Yeah. I'm so strong.
Take a deep breath. Welcome everyone to our own suitcase party.
Okay. So I always think about it in terms of my second child. I don't remember the first 3 years of his life, but I don't think about it in terms of, I don't remember my first child between the ages of 2.5 and 5 or 6. He was diagnosed with PANS, which is essentially brain inflammation, at 5. So it all contributes to me feeling like I have missed out. He is about to turn 11. I have missed out on a lot of his life. And so a couple of days ago, I was just kind of marinating on that and realized that whenever I get in that headspace of really kind of not circling the drain, I just am trying to process it, I guess. I always go back and I look at pictures of my second child and videos to like, oh, this is what I missed. Because you would not have known this from the outside. I'm very, very good at dissociating. Like, you watch the videos, you listen, even if you listen to me talking, I'm very, very good at masking too. So it's impossible to tell. No one knew. And I don't go back and look at pictures of my first. And so I was looking at pictures of him and I felt just like the grief of missing that, just like a sledgehammer to my chest. And I was like, oh, I'm going to cry now. So that's kind of been weighing heavy on my heart. Because I think that was this weekend, actually, that happened, maybe. It was Friday, Saturday, something like that. And then I have a mom's group that I go to every week. And yesterday, you know, it's a Bible study mom's group. Yesterday, we were talking about like, what blessings have you gotten lately? And I was like, oh, the restoration of the relationship with my oldest child. Because I had that up until he was 5, that he's diagnosed with PANS, which, let me tell you, it is, before I knew what it was, I thought my child was possessed. Like, that's a very crazy thing to say. I kind of recognize that, but that's how dramatic it was. It was like he was possessed.
Imagine if you didn't have that diagnosis either, how lost that would feel.
Because I'm so thankful that I had friends in this community that could help diagnose it and also figure out what was causing it, because it has a cause. It's, you know, for us, it was mold. And it looks like a bad kid. That's what it looks like to the outside. It looks like I'm not parenting. It looks like my kid is just a bad kid. In reality, his brain was inflamed.
Well, and very seriously, it causes neurological synapses to not be able to fire appropriately. Your immune system can't fight things off. And correct me on this if I'm wrong. I'm totally paraphrasing here.
You are.
But like with strep, they continuously get strep virus and their bodies don't fight it off the same way that ours do. So they continuously are susceptible to this over and over and over. And it causes that inflammation, which also activates these parts of the brain that you're going to see in those manifestations where you say he looks possessed or he's just completely overloaded with sensory issues.
He was in fight or flight nonstop. And now he's older. We know his triggers. He's not as sensitive. We have brought him out of inflammation. So he existed in a total state of inflammation for a very long time. So essentially, if you think about PANS, it's not dissimilar to us being in fight or flight. If you think about if you are in fight or flight as an adult and someone is trying to explain to you the economy, you're going to be like, I can't understand this. Don't try to explain venture capitalism to me because I don't know. I'm trying to survive. So it was very fight or flight. It was very hard to parent because it looks like someone circling the drain and you have to remain very calm. And there are also multiple moments, like a lot of my worst parenting moments were during those years, because if you think of like some of the older movies where like a woman is like, and then like someone goes, smacks them out of it. Like it is literally like a loop that you have to shake them out of. That feels awful.
Yeah.
Let me tell you, because there was no way to get him to stop except to physically hold. Like there were multiple days I had to hold him on the bed and be like, stop it. And kind of like shake him. That feels awful. That was the only way. Because otherwise he just spin and spin and spin and hurt himself, hurt me, hurt his brother, break things. So I've been dealing with that. Let's say he's almost 11. I've been dealing with that for 5.5 years. And my mom's group, we were talking about that. And I said, I feel like it's restoring that relationship, which is something that I need right now. And today I was feeling really, really heavily the mental burden of being the mom. I mean, the moms in general are the ones who are like, the kids need to get their teeth cleaned. The kids need to go to the doctor. They need to get their hair cut. They need the next size up in shoes. All of their shorts have holes in them. Like, it's this mental burden in general that the mother carries. And I was very realistically feeling that burden this morning when I was having to homeschool, do stuff for the podcast, do stuff for my personal business, make breakfast, take care of a baby, do all of these things while my husband is not in the house. And let me tell you what I saw this morning, which is just proof of this restoration of this relationship. I have watched this boy become much more sensitive again, which is who he is. And his brother is very difficult to school and very slow. And I was like, I've been standing here with you for 2 hours. I cannot do this any longer. I feel like I'm going to peel my skin off of my body. I have to record with Kim in an hour. I am going to go work out. I'll finish your school later. And my oldest came out into the garage holding his little baby sister. And he said, can I help him finish his school so that we can play together? And I said, yeah, because that probably counts as school for you. And it can count as your chore. They have to do school, chores, lunch, and then they have screen time. And he was like, it's actually kind of enjoyable. So I watched my boy that has been one of the hardest things in my life for the past 5.5 years take that burden from me. And let me tell you, if that is not like restoration of what the locusts have eaten and restoration of that relationship. And it's just, it's who he is. And so I'm saying all that just to share, like, I always want us to be sharing like what we're working through and what we're going through, because I know that we're not alone in a lot of these things, but I was feeling the mental burden very heavily. And I was like, I don't know how to carry this. I don't know what I can do. And help came in a very unexpected way. And I think when we have our eyeballs open and we're willing to accept things that may be not what we expect, maybe different, very often we can find healing, we can find relief, we can find these things in places that we didn't expect. I just talked for a really long time.
I don't care.
I know.
Well, and I'm thinking through, of course, as you're talking about my son, who is incredibly gifted when it comes to math, like anything STEM.
Yeah.
And my daughter, who is incredibly artistic and expressive, and neither are wrong, but they are completely different brained. Mm-hmm. And she brought home math. And that's like a, I've never been good at math. I'm phenomenal at psychological statistics, which I learned long into college. You can really like and excel at statistics and not love or be good at math because they're two different things. But when I hear math, I'm like, I picture crying at the kitchen table because I'm like, my brain hurts. So she's kind of the same way. And I can't figure out how to explain this to her. This is why I know I never would be able to handle homeschooling. But I don't know. And my son sat down next to her. He's like, oh, this is how we do it. Because they learn mathematics. It's like a Bridges curriculum. It's completely different than when we did it. And he's explaining it to her. And she's loving it because he just did this not too long ago. Ooh, okay. So I can keep doing dinner. And it is like those are few and far between moments. But when you do see them, it was recognizing it in the moment as it's happening. That's pretty darn cool. That does show what you're talking about with the restoration. You did well. Good job, Mama.
I am realizing a lot of things. I'm realizing that I have viewed my children. This is like I'm being like super vulnerable and super authentic as there's a baby.
As they scream in the background.
Yeah, it's the baby. She's here. She exists. She has a lot to say. I'm realizing that I started to view my children as burdens in the last couple of years. Have I talked about that here yet?
I don't think so, but please continue.
Yeah. So I think this started because I had to figure out how to heal myself. And I found the things that worked for me. And then I have watched my children as I have become more healed. They have needed more from me because I have more to give, right? So as I'm able to give more, they now are able to ask for more, which they always needed. I just couldn't give. So now they're beginning to ask for more from me, which means they need more time from me, which means they're inhibiting the things that I have needed to heal and feel like my best self in the last few years. And so because of that, I started to see them as burdens. Y'all, I'm speaking things that I know other people feel, but are afraid to say out loud. I was resenting them, if I'm being super duper honest, because I'm like, I'm just trying to get a workout in. Like, I'm just trying to get my work done. You guys can't leave me alone for 45 minutes. No, they can't. and I felt very. You can take this for whatever you want. If you're spiritual, if you're, you know, take it however you want. But I felt very convicted about a week and a half ago. I was working out 3 minutes into my workout. My husband is home. Both of the kids, the baby, the dog, everyone comes into the garage while I'm trying to work out. Fitness is the number one thing that I do for my stress. And I was like, you guys can't just leave me alone to do this one thing. And I immediately heard a voice in my head, felt a conviction saying, they're not burdens. Those are your children. They're your responsibility to raise. They are blessings. Stop viewing them as burdens. There is nothing that you are doing that is more important than shepherding those tiny little hearts to become full-fledged, responsible, emotionally adjusted adults. And that really sobered me real fast. And it made me, that's kind of the big impetus behind me getting a little more off of social media, because it reminds me of the conversation that we had with Veronica. Does your calendar match your values? Mm-hmm. And the way I was spending my time during the day wasn't what I wanted my legacy to be. My husband and I recently went to a birthday party of a family friend. He's 70 years old. and everyone is standing up and telling these stories about him and the legacy that he's left. And we left that party and my husband looked at me and said, will people say that about me when I'm 70 years old? What will my legacy be? What will people be standing up and saying about me in 20 years? Are we living our lives in a way that we want people? Kim says all the time, don't get up and tell people that I lit up a room at my funeral. Like, but are we living lives? Like, that's kind of heavy. But I think if you're not making those decisions every day, then you're not making decisions. Like, if you don't know what your final destination is, how the hell do you know if you're going in the right direction? If you're not looking at the horizon every so often. So I don't know. That's kind of what's been, that's the heavy shit that's been brewing around in this old noggin for the last couple of weeks. And yeah, just peeling back the layers. This onion's being peeled.
Well, and not to do the very obvious,
I know water's not wet, they're molecules, they don't touch each other, blah, blah, blah.
But in the very obvious, you don't say. The U.S. Surgeon General issued an advisory on the mental health and well-being of parents as being a crisis in the United States.
Yeah.
And I was reading through it and I'm like, duh. Of course it is. But just because so many other people are experiencing the same thing as you are does not make your experience of that mental burden, of that experience, any less. It doesn't make it less important. It simply means that this is something that is beyond us. It is systematic. It is part of our sociology, and it impacts all of us in a way that should remind us to grant ourselves a little grace. And that is in parenting, in a relationship with yourself, whatever it might be. It's okay to take a breath and not be perfect the whole time if you're doing your best at whatever that might be.
Heck yeah. I mean, I think at least once a week of this idea that, like, if all you have to give today is 30% and you gave 30%, then you gave 100%. Like, all you, it's like, if you gave everything, even if it wasn't 100%, even if it didn't look like someone else's, like, you gave everything that you had today, then you did your best. Like, that's all we're doing here. And the kids will be okay. I mean, I could soapbox about this idea of parenting and how society presents it. And I think it is an epidemic of society tells you children are burdens a lot of the time. Like, oh, God, I can't wait till my kids go back to school. Yeah, I mean, that's fine. But also, like, you are very intentional and very present, and you connect with your children when they are not in school. It's okay to be like, I need to get things done.
Yeah.
But it's not because you don't like your children. Society makes it seem like our children are burdens and they prevent us from girl bossing. But like, right. But if you don't want to girl boss and you just want to be a mom, or
there's no just about it.
Right.
Really the friggin' hardest. Not being a mom. I love being a mom. Being a mom is easy. Parenting is effing hard.
Dude, it's so hard.
Oh, real hard.
So many moments lately where I'm like, are my children sociopaths?
I don't know. We'll find out.
Time will tell. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like that went real far right. But I just want to acknowledge all of the things and say also, if you are struggling with any of those things, sorry, please.
Okay, so I know that we have talked about this in a couple different episodes, and I finally found the term that I was looking for, but you were just talking about masking and whether that was in a parenting way or whatever it might be. Have you heard of the term code switching?
Yeah.
Okay. So I first heard about code switching in relation to the LGBTQ community and then from persons of color, because they feel like they have to colonize, gentrify, do the heterosexual thing to be more accepted.
Yes, be societally. I feel like this is the theme of this whole thing. We started talking about alcohol.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then here we are talking about this. So this is
really quick. If you have never heard of code switching, brief overview. It's a linguistic and sociological phenomenon that involves switching between languages or dialects or changing aspects of one's identity in a given situation. There's research about people who are bilingual that their entire personality changes when they use the different languages or dialects. And I have always found that fascinating. But this is something I relate to you might understand this too. If you are someone who grew up and had different groups of friends, those different groups of friends, you might act differently around. And there may have been some anxiety even when your friend groups meet. And you're like, who am I when both of these people are together? As you get older, more assured, like I'm the same across the board. What you see is what you get. I'm not going to be different. I can be professional. I can be my laid back self that does stupid things all the time. It doesn't matter. I'm a whole person. However, I've not always been that way. There are times where I changed how I laughed because I knew that it was embarrassing to
do. I hear myself laugh on video and I'm like, ew.
All I have in my head is the Kamala laugh right now because everybody's doing it on social media and stuff and parodying. But there's like, that's a very small piece. I'm looking at more of when it starts to denigrate who you are as a person. So I think of people who identify as anything except straight up heterosexual. They have to acclimate and act and change the way that they speak and present to fit into a mold so that they will be more acceptable. And at some point that starts chipping away at who you are. And for those of us who have experienced trauma, we are constantly code switching. We are having to act as if we are okay. We are having to act as if, yes, I have these burdens, but don't worry about it. I would hate for this to get on you. We are always on the lookout for how we can be more palatable. And as we become more comfortable and find people, wherever they may be, who understand and accept us, we can start to feel okay again in our skin. But I just think about this, like what's on the inside of your suitcase and what's on the outside? Like there's a reason I fly Southwest, and that's because my emotional baggage is free, along with my two free bags. Pack your bags, everybody. We're going to Trauma Town. I look at all these things, though, like these are the things that we have in our bag and we have control over. Why does anybody else in the airport give a shit what I've packed? Why?
Spoiler alert, they don't.
They don't. No one is thinking about me as much as I am thinking about me. And that's how it should be. We just shouldn't have to.
I feel like there's a whole podcast episode in and of itself.
Oh, totally.
Which we've talked about so many times. Like nobody's fighting as hard for me as I'm fighting for me. Nobody is advocating for me as hard as I'm advocating for me. Nobody is going to remember if I wore the same outfit the last two times I saw them.
Yep.
Because I don't know what I wore yesterday until I look in my dirty clothes. Why are they going to be any different?
But you in middle school would have cared way, way more because the social capital that you would earn from,
I still do. Are you kidding me? Sometimes I'm like, we had a meeting with an attorney yesterday and I was like, I'm pretty sure I wore the same outfit last time.
They don't know.
And I know they don't know. In my head where I'm like, they're going to know.
Nobody's going to know. The thing with the news anchors and the guy, the male news anchor is making a point because he wore the exact same outfit for an entire year and no one noticed. But his female co-anchor, everyone notices and feels like they can comment on her appearance. I always thought, like, good on him for pointing that out. And it's also bullshit. And this is the system that we have to operate within. I would be really interested to hear where you find yourself code switching. And are you able to catch yourself in real time? Is it something you want to be doing? Are you doing it on purpose? Or is it something that you feel like is ingrained in you and you have to do? So I would love to hear more from those of you listening, what those codes and that switching looks like.
Yeah. And I think just like all of these things, I think that there's always overlap between neurodivergences and how we do these things too, because it's not just one thing or the other. It's not always just like, they're not mutually exclusive. Like there's a lot of Venn diagrams happening all up in here. So
the Venn diagram is a circle.
it's just a circle. So I don't know. Interesting conversations. Hopefully we got your brains kind of rolling on some interesting ideas today.
But just in case you didn't have your brain overloaded yet, I've got one more ask, and if you are so inclined, let this be your birthday gift to me, because my birthday is on Sunday. I'm going to give you a call to action in our episodes, which we don't always do for our chit-chat episodes, but I'm going to give you a very important call to action, and in the show notes, we're going to link all of these scripts, the templates for the emails, calls you can make, things you can do on social media. Here it is. I need you to urge Congress to pass the Crime Victims Fund Stabilization Act. I can't overstate how much, I don't know what else to call it other than a tragic circumstance that victims funding is in right now. There was a surplus of funding during COVID that was given to victim-centric agencies. So I'm talking about like your community organizations that offer counseling, hotlines, things like that. Anybody who receives those victim services grants, even government entities, are being cut by like more than half. Because during COVID, there were not as many offenders that were being arrested and prosecuted. And that is where a lot of that funding comes from. We need a fix, and we need it like last year. So we are coming up on the 11th hour, and Congress absolutely has to act. We should not have to beg our representatives to take care of those populations that are the most vulnerable right now. You can scream until you're blue in the face on a debate stage, or person to person, or online, be a keyboard warrior. I don't care. What I am telling you matters is that safe place for that victim in your community to go to. Because for us, it is a matter of life and death. You have to have funding for these services, for these organizations, and for these victims. So if you do nothing else today, please take this call to action to heart. Get involved. Look up more about what it means and what the long-term implications are. Because we fund the most ridiculous things all the time that just go completely by. We never have to hear about, they're earmarked, and anyone who stands even slightly outside of politics probably wouldn't know about because it is way too daunting. This should not be one of them. Victim services absolutely need funding. They need stable funding, and they need to make sure that they are able to care for those populations in our own communities. So I will include all of that in the show links. It's just very important, and I am sure I'll put more out on my social media about it. But if you could. So it is H.R. 8061 S4514. I'm going to include all of that information in our show notes.
Thank you for bringing that to everyone's attention and my attention, because, you know, I think a lot of people who are victims benefit from these funds. I mean, I know you and I have both benefited from these services and work with the agencies that benefit from these services. So hopefully you guys can go and do that. That would mean the world to us. And happy almost birthday, Kim.
Hey, thanks. I'm really excited. We should like get together.
We should do that.
Maybe we can work that out.
Maybe. Okay.
Until next time.
Well, next time, friends.
Survivor's Guide to True Crime is hosted and executive produced by Kimberly Corbin Rourke and Kara Robinson Chamberlain.
If you love what we do here, please don't forget to follow, rate, and review the show in your podcast player. It's an easy and free way to help us and help more people find the show.
To learn more about the guests featured or to find resources and information discussed on the show, visit survivorsguidetotruecrime.com.
Thanks for listening.
Well, see you later.
Nipples don't need to be on the internet.